And good Saturday morning to you, the first Saturday of the summer season. I am joined this morning from the University of Minnesota, Julie Weisenhorn. Julie, good morning.
Hey, Denny, how are you today? Happy summer.
Yeah, it is all of that. And bring your umbrella. Still.
That's right. And your
keep
and your
it handy. Still chances of more rain today. But I tell you, what a difference a year makes, though. Remember last year you and I would be on this show and it's praying for rain.
Yeah.
And now it's the opposite. But hey.
And I feel so much for the East Coast folks who are in 100-plus degrees.
Oh,
and I'm thinking, wow, it's like, I don't know, 68 degrees here. And, you know, I'm looking for my long pants and jacket.
Yeah, isn't that true? The theater of seasons, as we say.
Yes.
We're in the midst of our Smart Garden Show. If you're new to the show, thanks for checking us out. We are here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, welcoming your lawn and garden questions at 651-461-9226. Now, you can call it in or you can text it in. Either way, it's the one number to remember, 651-461-9226. Julie, let's get to it before we get too far removed. A text came in actually early this morning.
All right.
And let's see if I can find it. All right, here it is. This listener has a 700-square-foot section of our 3 acres in Andover. We do not want to cut, but enjoy some color from wildflowers. How and when can you plant wildflowers by seed is their first question. And right now they said the native grass is 3 feet tall, but not very dense at all. Love the show. All right, how and when can they plant wildflowers by seed?
So they're talking about creating a natural type lawn, natural managed landscape. This is a landscape where the owner has intentionally planted a natural landscape. So that means taking care of invasive plants, Canada thistle, garlic mustard, things that might pop up in there. That's really important. But also looking for a really good mix depending on the condition. So they're up in Anoka. I'm going to hazard a guess that they have sandier soil because Anoka is on the Anoka sand plain. And they are going to want to purchase plants that fit and will grow within the light restrictions that they have. So it sounds like it's probably full sun at this point since you're talking about native grasses. My best advice here, you can take a look at our website. We have a great page called Native Plants, and it includes information on wildflowers and pollinator habitat, native grasses. Mary Meyer, who's on this show, has written a lot of this. But I would also talk to some of our native plant nurseries because they create specialized mixes for conditions like this. So they would listen to the customer, find out the amount of space. They have 700 square feet, the type of light that they have, the type of soil that they have, and then they would recommend a mix for them. So we have excellent native nurseries. You can contact or take a look at the Minnesota DNR website. They have a great listing of native plant suppliers. And I would start with that. Take a look at the native plants webpage we have, but then also work with one of our very knowledgeable native plant growers here in Minnesota.
Excellent. Again, 651-461-9226. Denny Long here, along with Julie Weisenhorn. Julie, here's another one about this one about a snowball viburnum that was so full of blossoms when the wind and rain broke down a once 15-foot tree. How far can it be trimmed to generate regrowth is their question. Snowball viburnum.
Sure. So viburnum can be coppiced or cut down to the ground, and they can do that pretty much any time. If it is broken and really looks bad right now, then I would do some really selective pruning. And then I would probably wait until after the growing season to go ahead and coppice that, to cut it down to the ground. It will start to come back. We do this with a lot of our multi-stem shrubs, like dogwoods, for example. And you can take that down and new stems will start to grow up from the base of that plant.
Okay, great. Let's grab a phone call. Julie, Fred checking in this morning from West St. Paul. Hi, Fred. What is your question for Julie?
Yes, we've got a crab apple tree that has been dying, and now it appears to have dead man's fingers growing around the base. And we want to know if we can replace that tree in any way, other than just digging it up. And or replace it with another crab apple. I'll hang up and listen. Give us your best advice, please. Thank you.
Sure. So dead man's fingers. Those are, I believe, a type of fungi that grows from the base. It's actually growing from some... are you there, Denny?
Oh, yes.
Okay. You were so quiet.
No, I'm listening and learning.
Okay. So dead man's fingers are a type of fungi, I believe, that grow up from rotting woody material, like roots that are dying off. So it sounds to me like this tree has seen its life. I would recommend taking it out. I would cut it down, and then I would also remove whatever rootstock that you could, and you can have someone come and grind that out. You may still see some of that fungi growing up as long as there are still woody roots that are decomposing underground. But yes, you certainly can replace that tree with an fungi growing up as long as there are still woody roots that are decomposing underground. But yes, you certainly can replace that tree with another crabapple. There are a lot of really fabulous crabapples. One of my favorites is called Sugar Time. It's a white crabapple with a little bit of pink in the flowers, and it's a very, very excellent bloomer, and it also hangs on to its fruit through the winter. So you get a little bit of year-round interest that way. It's not a huge crabapple. I think you can still buy it out there. We have one in front of Alderman Hall that I've always loved on the St. Paul campus. But that's a good recommendation. The most important thing with crabapples is look for the disease-resistant crabapples. And there are lots of them that are resistant to things like cedar apple rust and some of the other really complex or regular types of diseases that we see in these trees. So look for disease resistance, and then pay attention to the size of the tree that you want. So look at the mature size of the tree and see if that fits with the space that you have. There are very small crab apples all the way to humongous crab apples. So take a look at that. Do a little bit of reading. We do have some information on trees and shrubs on our extension site. And then also talk to some of your local tree suppliers as well. It's always best to buy local.
Julie, they're interesting because just before that call came in, a text came in from another part of the state asking, what's happening to the crab apple tree to make it dry up within 4 weeks of abundant blooming? And will it come back?
Well, drying up is kind of a nebulous term. So I'm guessing they're seeing some leaf drop, leaves drying up and dropping. There are, think of the conditions that we've had. Windy, which blows a lot of fungal spores and bacterial spores around. Also very, very wet, a lot of splashing, so we've got wind, we've got rain, and then we also have humidity. And all of those things add up to a lot of leaf spot problems, and that could be what they're seeing on their crab apple. That crab apple may very well leaf back out later this season. The leaves may be a little bit smaller, but just take a look at it, keep an eye on it, and if you have any concerns, contact a certified arborist. We have a lot of great arborists here in Minnesota, and have somebody come out and take a look at your tree and assess it.
Absolutely. I have many, many good arborists. I know we have to break here, but a quick one from a listener. Will powdery mildew kill a mandevilla?
Powdery mildew is a leaf spot disease. It thrives in humid conditions. We've had tons of humidity. It may really make it look really lousy for a while. Sometimes it can get so bad that it does defoliate the plant, but it doesn't really kill it necessarily. So you can just try to thin out that plant to get a lot of airflow through it, and just keep an eye on it in this case. And if it really gets just awful and you can't stand it, it may be time for a new plant.
All right. Very good. Hang on, Julie. We'll take this quick break. Invite our listeners to join in on this conversation. Lawn and Garden Talk, 651-461-9226. Right now, here in the Twin Cities, we have 67 degrees. Actually, some fog still reported around the metro. Another chance of showers today. We'll get up to 75 today, but it looks like a beautiful day tomorrow. Mostly sunny skies predicted, highs near 81. Right now, 67 from News Talk 830. This is WCCO. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M is answering all of those lawn and garden questions. And Julie, as usual, there are many. Let's back up just a little bit, because I know you kind of wanted to revisit the powdery mildew issue.
I do want to do that, because I wanted to explain a little bit about powdery mildew. Powdery mildew is a fungal leaf spot disease, and it appears about this time of year and starts to get worse as the summer goes on. We see it on many, many, many plants. Many are susceptible. Most of them, it's for most plants, it's cosmetic. In other words, we don't like the way they look, but the plant will survive. In some cases, it can defoliate a plant pretty poorly, you know, in a pretty severe way. And I wanted to talk about how to help minimize powdery mildew. Now, there are fungicides you can spray, but you have to spray them before you see the powdery mildew. And that's the trick, is most of us respond to what we see happening. And by the time we see it on our plants, it's too late. So it means keeping good records and saying, this plant is really susceptible to it. I don't like the way it looks. I'm going to spray it before I see the powdery mildew, anticipating that I'm going to have that. You also have to pay attention to the weather. We've had really perfect weather for fungal spores to be flying around in our garden and landing on our leaves. The other thing you can do for powdery mildew is you can reduce the density of the canopy of the plant. So powdery mildew thrives in shady, humid conditions, so like perfect for a very dense canopy of a shrub, for example. And so you can thin out those shrub canopies by doing good, judicious pruning. And we happen to have three really great shrub pruning videos on our Trees and Shrubs webpage that just came out, including pruning for lilacs, pruning for in the winter for plants that we prune in the winter, and then also late winter. So we've got three great videos you can watch. But think about powdery mildew as kind of more of a nuisance than it is a real detriment to killing your plants off. And think about opening up those canopies with good pruning to allow more air and more sunlight to reach the inner part of your plant. That will also help reduce insect pests that like to hang out in those really humid, shady, protected areas of your plants as well.
Oh, that's a great information. And again, speaking of information, that website has so many things to learn.
Right. And we do have plant disease information on fungal and bacterial diseases of plants, including leaf spots. So you can read about that as well and learn a little bit more.
If you have never checked it out, do so. Extension.umn.edu. Listener says this. By the way, let me give the phone number, which is also the text number, 651-461-9226. How long after using Roundup can I plant?
Well, that should say, that should be the instruction that's on the back of the package. It's important, whatever you're spraying, whether it's an organic type of spray and you feel it's pretty low impact, or if it's something more like an herbicide, like a Roundup product or triclopyr, read the back of the label, read the label and understand it and apply it correctly. So you should be able to see, it should have a re-entry or a replanting piece of information on that label. If you don't know, I'm sure that there's a consumer line that you can go ahead and contact or look online for that, and they can let you know. All the products are a little bit different.
This listener, Julie, wants to know, can you suggest something to spread, to spray, to sprinkle, other than mothballs to discourage snakes around my house?
Oh, man. Well, snakes are kind of valuable, but they're, you know, a little creepy to most people.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, because I remember it may have been our friend Jim Gilbert saying something about if you see like frogs or toads around your yard, that's kind of a good, healthy yard.
Yeah, that mean, and they're also consuming a lot of insects and other pests that we might have. But as far as how to eliminate them, I'm not a fan of killing snakes, because they are valuable to the ecosystem. I would probably try to figure out where they're nesting. They often like to be in warm, like crevices. They burrow into crevices around rocks, so you might check that area. I'm guessing that they're going to, you know, have their brood and that they're going to all take off at that point. I'm not a snake expert. But again, our Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, the Minnesota DNR page, has good information on wild animals like that and how to, you know, how they live. And it's important to understand that so that you can manage that area or just let them be, stay out of that area for, you know, it might be the next couple of weeks and let them run their life cycle. And then you'll be able to do some maybe repair to that wall or wherever they're coming out.
And watch your mowing.
You don't want to mow the snake over.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
All right. Let's, Julie, look at another question from a listener. My vegetable garden is waterlogged. Will this hurt the vegetables like tomatoes, peppers, beets? Will fertilizer leach out?
Well, waterlogged soil is definitely something we're all dealing with. This is happening to us at the Foodscape, at the Minnesota Landscape Arboretum. It is really hard on particularly transplants, smaller plants. They just can't survive in waterlogged soil. The important thing is to modify your soil so you have good drainage, so that if you do get a lot of rain, it will drain through that soil and not have that issue. But even people with good drainage, we have just gotten such saturated soil that even good, well-drained soil is becoming really a problem. So I think that in that respect, you can just keep an eye on that. You may have to replant. So you may lose some of your plants like tomatoes. Depends how big they are too. The bigger plants can take up that water and survive, but it's those smaller transplants that really struggle. So you kind of have to sit and watch. I think we're going to have a nice stretch of warmer weather that's drier now. We have a little bit of rain chance, and that might help dry out that soil. So they might be okay then at that point. As far as leaching out fertilizer, yes, it's going to leach out your nitrogen. And so you're going to want to replace that nitrogen.
Very good. Julie, let's take a break for that forecast, see what we're expecting here in the next week or so. And when we come back, let's talk a little bit about what's going on at the Arboretum and what's going on with the abiders. We'll do that. when we come back here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Stay with us. And a good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. This morning, Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M answering those questions, those lawn and garden questions. And Julie, we've had callers, we have texters, but we always like to mention what's going on at the Arboretum. What a great place. And this is kind of a busy season, isn't it?
Man, it is so busy up there. It's fantastic. We, of course, have wonderful things blooming. Things like the hosta glade is looking fabulous, the rose gardens. Certainly some of our wildflower gardens like lady slippers are in bloom. So definitely come for the plants. But I want to do a plug for a new class session or class series that we have that's brand new to the Arboretum. It's called Grow, Harvest, Eat. And it's the opportunity that people have to literally grow their own recipe experiences. That's our tagline for it. It is a combination of learning from extension educators like me and my colleague Laura Irish Hansen and Master Gardeners on how to grow particular plants and then how to harvest them. And then we take them into the kitchen and our chef, Beth Fisher, works with people, the students, to actually create great food out of those ingredients that we grow. This is held in the Myers Education Center. We have the next one is coming up. It's called Garlic Five Ways. And it's going to be hosted on Wednesday morning, July 17th. Then in August, we have Ratatouille, which is on Wednesday, August 21st. And then Shakshuka on Wednesday, September 18th. And so it's a great three-hour class. You learn to grow, you learn to harvest, and then ultimately you get to eat what you just harvest, created by a fantastic executive chef, Beth Fisher. So I would encourage people to join us in this. It's going to be super fun. We had one about salads in June. Great personal one-on-one kind of experience for people. It's a very small group, only 12 students. And it's what we call a chef's counter, students, where you're literally sitting at the counter and Beth is there working and showing you how to create these great recipes. And you go home with a whole bunch of swag, including at the garlic session, we're going to be going home with garlic bulbs that people can then plant in the fall and know how to do that. Yeah.
What a great idea.
So I'm plugging that.
Excellent. How do we get more information, though, Julie?
You can go to the Arboretum website at arb.umn.edu and then go to classes or learn. Go to the Learn tab and under classes, go to adult classes. You can also just type in Grow, Harvest, Eat in the search box, and I'm sure you'll find it that way, too.
Great idea. All right. Let's get back to our Lawn and Garden show called Smart Garden with phone calls. First up, Maddie calling in from Coon Rapids this morning. Maddie, what is your question for Julie, please?
My first question is, I called in March or so, and you said I needed a special spray for white flies, insecticidal spray. The stores didn't have them, so I made a recipe that I found, 1 gallon of water, 2 teaspoons of baking soda, 2 teaspoons of dish detergent, and 2 teaspoons of white vinegar. And mixed that together, and it worked. It saved most of my plants. But now, this plant, I had this mixture mixed up, and I accidentally put fertilizer in with the mixture. Is that going to be safe to water the plants with this mixture in it, or should I dump it out and start over?
I would recommend dumping it out and starting over. Home remedies can be a little bit tricky, and I don't know how they would react with your fertilizer, so it's best to use them separately. I still am a advocate for purchasing a product like an insecticidal soap or a horticultural oil. They come pre-mixed in a spray bottle, and you can use them. You can read on the label, and it will say white flies or aphids or whatever pests it will treat. I'm glad you had good luck with your recipe. Sometimes those recipes, people don't follow all the correct instructions. You apparently did. You took care of your insects. But you want to start with, you want to separate your fertilizer from that.
Okay. Before we get back to the phones, Julie, I want to grab a couple of texters who've been waiting a while, too. Everything is blooming early this year, texter says. How can we keep the plant healthy so they can continue to grow? When do we, quote, stop fertilizing perennials and shrubs?
We usually stop fertilizing perennials and shrubs around August because we want those plants to slowly go into dormancy. And if we keep plugging them with a lot of fertilizer, they're going to keep growing new growth. And that new growth is not going to harden off before it gets cold around here. So stop fertilizing around August. But one thing you can do to keep your plants and maybe even encourage a second flush of flowers is to deadhead your plants. So I just did this up at the Foodscape, and I did it with our Monarda. So we had Bradbury's Monarda. It bloomed beautifully, great plant, and I went around and deadheaded it. So that's my recommendation for keeping those plants blooming and maybe get a second bloom. It's basically you're taking out the need to produce seed, and that's a lot of stress on a plant. But promoting a second flush of flowers is always great. So deadheading would be a good way to do it.
Very good. Back to the phones we go. Jack calling in this morning from Jenkins. Jack, what is your question for Julie?
Well, Julie, I have a couple of beautiful mandeville plants that have become a little waterlogged. So I drilled some holes in the bottom of these planters. The water completely drained out, I believe. Should it be something I should take out and put new potting soil in or let them just dry out on their own? Thank you.
Great question. Thank you for drilling the holes. That was a perfect thing to do. I think I would leave them for now. It depends how old the plants are. If you've had them for several years, if you've been able to keep them through winter, it may be time to repot them anyway. But definitely before you do anything, let them dry out. And then you can decide, maybe looking at the plant, yeah, I need to put this in a larger pot, and it would be good to transplant them. Sometimes it's good to do that just to check the roots to see if there's any rot, and you want to just prune that off if you see it.
Okay. Listener Julie wants to know, can I remove any dead branches from my ash tree, or do I need to wait until winter?
Well, I'm a fan of waiting till winter because you can actually see the plant, see the dead branches. But I would check on our Trees and Shrubs webpage on that. If they are completely dead branches, yes, you can probably prune those off now. I'm trying to think of the life cycle of the emerald ash borer. If there's anybody who's a tree care advisor or an arborist out there, if you're going to text in, that'd be great. I'm not sure of the pruning time. I think in the spring we want to stay away from pruning ash and just wait. So it's always the safest bet's always winter to do that.
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Texter says, so many gardener friends and myself have this problem. Are peonies with few or no buds in bloom? What is going on?
Well, that I'm not sure. It could be just the weather that we've been having. We've had a lot of cold or cool weather. It's been very wet. It's been very windy. It could be also that your peonies have become shaded by larger plants around them, just by, the plants growing. So I would take a look at the conditions that your plants are in. August is a good time to start transplanting peonies, so you may think about doing that. You may want to divide them, too. If they're really old plants, they could become quite crowded. And that, so August would be a good time to do that.
Let's grab another text before we take a quick break. This listener says, Sansevieria house plant, about 15 inches tall, has a small mushroom or toadstool at the base of the plant. What's going on?
Oh, it's just some fungal spores that are in that soil, whatever soil it, you might have potted it up with or it came with. It's probably too wet also. That's an indicator that the soil is too wet. Sansevieria are notorious for being hands-off kind of plants. They're great first plants for people. They tolerate and do well in low light, and they also really want to be neglected. So not a lot of fertilizer. In fact, So not a lot of fertilizer. In fact, I've killed a Sansevieria by over-fertilizing it before, and they don't really want to be repotted very much. So I would back off on any watering. Make sure your pot that it's in is draining well. Sometimes they come in decorative pots, and you've got a double pot situation. Make sure you're taking it out, and there's no water sitting in the base of that decorative pot. So, yeah, just that's a very hands-off plant.
Oh, that's great.
And you can pull that mushroom out.
Say, I want to ask you quickly before we take this quick break, what's happening with the abiders and when are you guys performing?
Hey, we are going to be at Minnetonka Orchards out in Minnetrista tomorrow afternoon or evening, 5 to 8. We'll be, and it looks like it's going to be really nice weather because we're outside.
Yes.
We'll be down by the pizza oven, and which is fantastic, by the way. They have also refreshments there too, both alcoholic and non-alcoholic. It's a great venue. We're really excited. We have a number of sessions with them this year over the next few months. And then we will be at Buckhorn Days in Long Lake on July 13th, and we'll be at the Arboretum on the 14th. So we have quite a few gigs coming up. Hope to see some of our listeners there. It's always really fun to meet you in person.
Oh, yeah. And you, I know we joke about it, but you have answered gardening questions in between sets.
Yes, I have.
It sounds like fun. It is fun. Yeah. I've been there, too. All right, Julie, hang on. We're going to take a quick break. You'll be right back with more Smart Garden on News Talk 830 WCCO. And good morning. Welcome back to the remaining minutes of our Smart Garden Show here on CCO every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M has been answering all of those lawn and garden questions, and we still have a bunch. See, Julie, how many we can field here before you leave.
That sounds good.
A royal frost birch that we planted, Texter says, 10 years ago. It thrived until last year when one of the tree trunks died. This year, another trunk died, and the last trunk only leafed out in the bottom 3 feet of branches. Is there any hope for that last remaining trunk, or are we best to remove the entire tree?
Yeah, this is a clump form, which are gorgeous. I'd be considering removing it at this point, because usually when you start to lose the individual branches or stems within a clump, the tree kind of looks lousy. You know, the other one is, it might be leaning one direction or so. It just looks odd. You've got these other two stumps that are around it. So I'd start looking for a new tree, especially because the third stem has not leafed out very well. Birches are fairly short-lived plants, you know, maybe 20 years. And oftentimes we put them into an urban sites where they really struggle. They like cool, acidic, highly organic, protected soils. Think of the North Shore, where they are covered with low-growing plants underneath, and nobody's mowing them, mowing on their roots or walking on them. The roots are very, very shallow. And so I would start thinking about another plant in this case.
Okay. Listener wants to know, can I prune back my burning bush now?
Yeah, you can probably prune some of that back. I do a little bit of selective pruning on a plant that I have, and it's just fine. So, yes, you can do some pruning.
This is an interesting lawn question. I can kind of relate to some of this. Love the show. Thank you. With all this rain, you would think my grass would be luscious, but even though I mow when I can, it appears to be yellow underneath and shows most after mowing. I mow between 3 1/4, 3 1/2 inches. I've seen some of that, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure why. I would think it would be a deep green.
Well, I wish John was on for this one.
Yeah.
I'm going to hazard a guess that this is probably due to the really wet conditions that we've had.
Yeah.
And it could also be that there is some kind of fungal or bacterial issue going on in these, particularly if it's in spots. You can take a picture of it, of what you're seeing after mowing, and you can send that in to ask a master gardener. We do have master gardeners who have trained under John for turf experience, and they may be able to isolate and determine the problem. I'm thinking it's abiotic, meaning it's conditions and not necessarily a biotic issue like an insect or a disease. But I think it's just been amazingly wet, and maybe it will grow out of it as things dry out.
Julie, another listener wants to know, should we be treating for slugs now? They haven't seen any yet, but expect they'll be showing up with all the moisture.
Yeah, I would start protecting plants from slugs if you have a history of that. Just a tip for hostas, one of the things that I do with my hostas, and I have hostas of all sizes, if the leaves are lying on the ground, you're creating like a perfect haven for slugs. And so just removing some of those lower leaves to increase the light to reach the base of the plant, you kind of get more of a little bit vase-shaped plant. But just removing some of those lower leaves will help to get that plant up off the ground and less likely to be infested by slugs. But there are also products, if you don't want to do that, that you can put out. Sometimes it's as simple as putting a board or something flat, like in a walkway area, and the slugs will be attracted to that. And you can pick up that board, flip it over in the morning, scrape those slugs right off and dispose of them.
Preferably after breakfast.
Or go fishing with them.
Okay, yes.
Feed them to your
snakes.
My gardener, Texas,
has heavy soil. Well, now it's getting moss all over. What do I do?
Oh, well, moss is oftentimes due to, of course, moisture, also compaction of soil. And so you may want to scrape off that moss and then maybe loosen up that soil, and then either, if you're going to plant, you know, herbaceous plants like perennials or annuals or something, or if you want to go ahead and seed that area. You could also mulch it. It might be an area that, you know, it's just a wet space. You put some mulch down on it and make it more of a walking access area.
Okay. 2 minutes to go on the show, Julie. Here's another one. I have a potted tropical hibiscus that I winter inside, put outside in the summer. It is overgrown and needs pruning. Can I do that now before setting it outside?
Yeah, totally. You can do that. And you can also do it again when you bring it inside. You can cut it back. Unfortunately, it's usually ready to bloom when we bring it in. But sometimes selective pruning will enhance the look of it and also help with the size management indoors. So, yeah, go ahead and prune.
Okay. This listener, Julie, says, how can I keep my daylilies blooming?
Well, daylilies are called daylilies because they only bloom one for a day, the flowers. So it depends on the type you have. Some are repeated bloomers like the common Stella de Oros, but some of the more, the larger daylilies, they will bloom profusely at first, and then they start to bloom less and less as the season goes on. So deadheading them is always a great idea because those stems look kind of lousy. And they also start to produce seed pods, so you can trim those off, and then that will put the energy of the plant into reblooming and also keeping the root development really strong. But if there's seed pods on it, that plant is going to put energy into producing those seed pods. So deadheading is what I recommend.
30 seconds to go, Julie. Let's remind the listeners to find a couple of things. Get to the Arboretum, and what is that university website?
extension.umn.edu. And if you did not get your question answered or you find you have one during the week, go to Ask a Master Gardener. You can send in photos, and we have many Master Gardeners waiting to help you.
And as far as the Arboretum goes, how do you find out more information? Get online.
Get online, arb.umn.edu, and check to see if you need tickets. Members do not need tickets on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays, but you just double check that before you come out all the way out here.
Sounds good. Have a good time tomorrow, Julie, you and the
Thanks.
Abiders. And let's talk soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Denny.
Julie Wisenhorn from the University of Minnesota. Stay tuned next for our home improvement show. A brand new grandpa, Andy Lindis, will be answering all of your home improvement questions next hour. Stay with us. News Talk 830. This is WCCO. And good Saturday morning to you, the first Saturday of the summer season. I am joined this morning from the University of Minnesota, Julie Wisenhorn. Julie, good morning.
Hey, Denny, how are you today? Happy summer.
Yeah, it is all of that. And bring your umbrella still.
That's right. And your
keep
and your
it boots. Handy. Still chances of more rain today, but... I tell you, what a difference a year makes, though. Remember last year you and I would be on this show, and it's praying for rain.
Yeah.
And now it's the opposite. But, hey.
And I feel so much for the East Coast folks who are in 100-plus degrees.
Oh,
and I'm thinking, wow, it's like, I don't know, 68 degrees here. And, you know, I'm looking for my long pants and jacket.
Yeah, isn't that true? The theater of seasons, as we say.
Yes.
We're in the midst of our Smart Garden Show. If you're new to the show, thanks for checking us out. We are here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, welcoming your lawn and garden questions at 651-461-9226. Now, you can call it in or you can text it in. Either way, it's the one number to remember, 651-461-9226. 9226. Julie, let's get to it before we get too far removed. A text came in actually early this morning.
All right.
And let's see if I can find it. All right, here it is. This listener has a 700 square foot section of our 3 acres in Andover. We do not want to cut, but enjoy some color from wildflowers. How and when can you plant wildflowers by seed is their first question. And right now they said the native grass is 3 feet tall but not very dense at all. Love the show. All right, how and when can they plant wildflowers by seed?
So they're talking about creating a natural type lawn, natural managed landscape. This is a landscape where the owner has intentionally planted a natural landscape. So that means taking care of invasive plants, canned thistle, garlic mustard, things that might pop up in there. That's really important. But also looking for a really good mix depending on the condition. So they're up in Anoka. I'm going to hazard a guess that they have sandier soil because Anoka is on the Anoka sand plain. And they are going to want to purchase plants that fit and will grow within the light restrictions that they have. So it sounds like it's probably full sun at this point since you're talking about native grasses. My best advice here, you can take a look at our website. We have a great page called Native Plants, and it includes information on wildflowers and pollinator habitat, native grasses. Mary Meyer, who's on this show, has written a lot of this. But I would also talk to some of our native plant nurseries because they create specialized mixes for conditions like this. So they would listen to the customer, find out the amount of space. They have 700 square feet, the type of light that they have, the type of soil that they have, and then they would recommend a mix for them. So we have excellent native nurseries. You can contact or take a look at the Minnesota DNR website. They have a great listing of native plant suppliers. And I would start with that. Take a look at the native plants webpage we have, but then also work with one of our very knowledgeable native plant growers here in Minnesota.
Excellent. Again, 651-461-9226. Denny Long here, along with Julie Weisenhorn. Julie, here's another one about this one about a snowball viburnum that was so full of blossoms when the wind and rain broke down a once 15-foot tree. How far can it be trimmed to generate regrowth, is their question. Snowball viburnum.
Sure. So viburnum can be coppiced or cut down to the ground, and they can do that pretty much any time. If it is broken and really looks bad right now, then I would do some really selective pruning. And then I would probably wait until after the growing season to go ahead and coppice that, to cut it down to the ground. It will start to come back. We do this with a lot of our multi-stem shrubs, like dogwoods, for example. And you can take that down and new stems will start to grow up from the base of that plant.
Okay, great. Let's grab a phone call. Julie, Fred checking in this morning from West St. Paul. Hi, Fred. What is your question for Julie?
Yes, we've got a crab apple tree that has been dying, and now it appears to have dead man's fingers growing around the base. And we want to know if we can replace that tree in any way, other than just digging it up, and or replace it with another crab apple. I'll hang up and listen. Give us your best advice, please. Thank you.
Sure. So dead man's fingers, those are, I believe, a type of fungi that grows from the base. It's actually growing from some... are you there, Denny?
Oh, yes.
Okay. You were so quiet.
No, I'm listening and learning.
Okay. So dead man's fingers are a type of fungi, I believe, that grow up from rotting woody material like roots that are dying off. So it sounds to me like this tree has seen its life. I would recommend taking it out. I would cut it down, and then I would also remove whatever rootstock that you could, and you can have someone come and grind that out. You may still see some of that fungi growing up, as long as there are still woody roots that are decomposing underground. But yes, you certainly can replace that tree with a fungi growing up, as long as there are still woody roots that are decomposing underground. But yes, you certainly can replace that tree with another crabapple. There are a lot of really fabulous crabapples. One of my favorites is called Sugar Time. It's a white crabapple with a little bit of pink in the flowers, and it's a very, very excellent bloomer, and it also hangs on to its fruit through the winter. So you get a little bit of year-round interest that way. It's not a huge crabapple. I think you can still buy it out there. We have one in front of Alderman Hall that I've always loved on the St. Paul campus. But that's a good recommendation. The most important thing with crabapples is look for the disease-resistant crabapples. And there are lots of them that are resistant to things like cedar apple rust and some of the other really complex or regular types of diseases that we see in these trees. So look for disease resistance and then pay attention to the size of the tree that you want. So look at the mature size of the tree and see if that fits with the space that you have. There are very small crab apples all the way to humongous crab apples. So take a look at that. Do a little bit of reading. We do have some information on trees and shrubs on our extension site. And then also talk to some of your local tree suppliers as well. It's always best to buy local.
Julie, they're interesting because just before that call came in, a text came in from another part of the state asking, what's happening to the crabapple tree to make it dry up within 4 weeks of abundant blooming, and will it come back?
Well, drying up is kind of a nebulous term, so I'm guessing they're seeing some leaf drop, leaves drying up and dropping. There are, think of the conditions that we've had. Windy, which blows a lot of fungal spores and bacterial spores around. Also very, very wet. A lot of splashing, a lot of So we've got wind, we've got rain, and then we also have humidity. And all of those things add up to a lot of leaf spot problems, and that could be what they're seeing on their crabapple. That crabapple may very well leaf back out later this season. The leaves may be a little bit smaller, but just take a look at it, keep an eye on it, and if you have any concerns, contact a certified arborist. We have a lot of great arborists here in Minnesota, and have somebody come out and take a look at your tree and assess it.
Absolutely. I have many, many good arborists. I know we have to break here, but a quick one from a listener. Will powdery mildew kill a mandevilla?
Powdery mildew is a leaf spot disease. It thrives in humid conditions. We've had tons of humidity. It may really make it look really lousy for a while. Sometimes it can get so bad that it does defoliate the plant, but it doesn't really kill it necessarily. So you can just try to thin it out, thin out that plant to get a lot of airflow through it, and just keep an eye on it in this case. And if it really gets just awful and you can't stand it, it may be time for a new plant.
All right. Very good. Hang on, Julie. We'll take this quick break. Invite our listeners to join in on this conversation. Lawn and Garden Talk, 651-461-9226. Right now, here in the Twin Cities, we have 67 degrees. Actually, some fog still reported around the metro. Another chance of showers today. We'll get up to 75 today, but it looks like a beautiful day tomorrow. Mostly sunny skies predicted, highs near 81. Right now, 67 from Newstalk 830. This is WCCO. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M is answering all of those lawn and garden questions. And Julie, as usual, there are many. Let's back up just a little bit, because I know you kind of wanted to revisit the powdery mildew issue.
I do want to do that, because I wanted to explain a little bit about powdery mildew. Powdery mildew is a fungal leaf spot disease. And it appears about this time of year and starts to get worse as the summer goes on. We see it on many, many, many plants. Many are susceptible. Most of them, it's cosmetic. In other words, we don't like the way they look, but the plant will survive. In some cases, it can defoliate a plant pretty poorly, you know, in a pretty severe way. And I wanted to talk about how to help minimize powdery mildew. Now, there are fungicides you can spray, but you have to spray them before you see the powdery mildew. And that's the trick, is most of us respond to what we see happening. And by the time we see it on our plants, it's too late. So it means keeping good records and saying, this plant is really susceptible to it. I don't like the way it looks. I'm going to spray it before I see the powdery mildew, anticipating that I'm going to have that. You also have to pay attention to the weather. We've had really perfect weather for fungal spores to be flying around in our garden and landing on our leaves. The other thing you can do for powdery mildew is you can reduce the density of the canopy of the plant. So powdery mildew thrives in shady, humid conditions, so like perfect for a very dense canopy of a shrub, for example. And so you can thin out those shrub canopies by doing good, judicious pruning. And we happen to have three really great shrub pruning videos on our Trees and Shrubs webpage that just came out, including pruning for lilacs, pruning for in the winter for plants that we prune in the winter, and then also late winter. So we've got three great videos you can watch. But think about powdery mildew as kind of more of a nuisance than it is a real detriment to killing your plants off. And think about opening up those canopies with good pruning to allow more air and more sunlight to reach the inner part of your plant. That will also help reduce insect pests that like to hang out in those really humid, shady, protected areas of your plants as well.
That's great information. And again, speaking of information, that website has so much, so many things to learn.
Right, and we do have plant disease information on fungal and bacterial diseases of plants, including leaf spots. So you can read about that as well and learn a little bit more.
If you have never checked it out, do so. Extension.umn.edu. Listener says this. By the way, let me give the phone number, which is also the text number, 651-461-9226. How long after using Roundup can I plant?
Well, that should say, that should be the instruction that's on the back of the package. It's important, whatever you're spraying, whether it's an organic type of spray and you feel it's pretty low impact, or if it's something more like an herbicide, like a Roundup product or triclopyr, read the back of the label, read the label and understand it and apply it correctly. So you should be able to see, it should have a re-entry or a replanting piece of information on that label. If you don't know, I'm sure that there's a consumer line that you can go ahead and contact or look online for that, and they can let you know. All the products are a little bit different.
This listener, Julie, wants to know, can you suggest something to spread, to spray, to sprinkle, other than mothballs to discourage snakes around my house?
Oh, man. Well, snakes are kind of valuable, but they're, you know, a little creepy to most people.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, because I remember it may have been our friend Jim Gilbert saying something about if you see like frogs or toads around your yard, that's kind of a good, healthy yard.
Yeah, that mean, and they're also consuming a lot of insects and other pests that we might have. But as far as how to eliminate them, I'm not a fan of killing snakes because they are valuable to the ecosystem. I would probably try to figure out where they're nesting. They often like to be in warm, like crevices. They burrow into crevices around rocks, so you might check that area. I'm guessing that they're going to, you know, have their brood and that they're going to all take off at that point. I'm not a snake expert. But again, our Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, the Minnesota DNR page, has good information on wild animals like that and how to, you know, how they live. And it's important to understand that so that you can manage that area or just let them be, stay out of that area for, you know, it might be the next couple of weeks. And let them run their life cycle, and then you'll be able to do some maybe repair to that wall or wherever they're coming out.
And watch your mowing.
And watch your mowing. You don't want to mow the snake over.
Oh no!
Yeah.
All right. Let's, Julie, look at another question from a listener. My vegetable garden is waterlogged. Will this hurt the vegetables like tomatoes, peppers, beets? Will fertilizer leach out?
Well, waterlogged soil is definitely something we're all dealing with. This is happening to us at the Foodscape, at the Minnesota Landscape Arboretum. It is really hard on particularly transplants, smaller plants. They just can't survive in waterlogged soil. The important thing is to modify your soil so you have good drainage, so that if you do get a lot of rain, it will drain through that soil and not have that issue. But even people with good drainage, we have just gotten such saturated soil that even good, well-drained soil is, becoming really a problem. So I think that in that respect, you can just keep an eye on that. You may have to replant. So you may lose some of your plants like tomatoes. Depends how big they are too. The bigger plants can take up that water and survive, but it's those smaller transplants that really struggle. So I would you kind of have to sit and watch. I think we're going to have a nice stretch of warmer weather that's drier now. We have a little bit of rain chance, and that might help dry out that soil. So they might be okay then at that point. As far as leaching out fertilizer, yes, it's going to leach out your nitrogen, and so you're going to want to replace that nitrogen.
Very good. Julie, let's take a break for that forecast, see what we're expecting here in the next week or so. And when we come back, let's talk a little bit about what's going on at the Arboretum and what's going on with the abiders. We'll do that. When we come back here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Stay with us. And a good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. This morning, Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M answering those questions, those lawn and garden questions. And Julie, we've had callers, we have texters, but we always like to mention what's going on at the Arboretum. What a great place. And this is kind of a busy season, isn't it?
Man, it is so busy up there. It's fantastic. We, of course, have wonderful things blooming. Things like the hosta glade is looking fabulous, the rose gardens. Certainly some of our wildflower gardens like lady slippers are in bloom. So definitely come for the plants. But I want to do a plug for a new class session or class series that we have that's brand new to the Arboretum. It's called Grow, Harvest, Eat. And it's the opportunity that people have to literally grow their own recipe experiences. That's our tagline for it. It is a combination of learning from extension educators like me and my colleague Laura Irish Hansen and Master Gardeners on how to grow particular plants and then how to harvest them. And then we take them into the kitchen and our chef, Beth Fisher, works with people, the students, to actually create great food out of those ingredients that we grow. This is held in the Myers Education Center. We have the next one is coming up. It's called Garlic Five Ways. And it's going to be hosted on Wednesday morning, July 17th. Then in August, we have Ratatouille, which is on Wednesday, August 21st. And then Shakshuka on Wednesday, September 18th. And so it's a great three-hour class. You learn to grow, you learn to harvest, and then ultimately you get to eat what you just harvest, created by a fantastic executive chef, Beth Fisher. So I would encourage people to join us in this. It's going to be super fun. We had one about salads in June. Great personal one-on-one kind of experience for people. It's a very small group, only 12 students. And it's what we call a chef's counter, students, where you're literally sitting at the counter and Beth is there working and showing you how to create these great recipes. And you go home with a whole bunch of swag, including at the garlic session, we're going to be going home with garlic bulbs that people can then plant in the fall and know how to do that. Yeah.
What a great idea.
So I'm plugging that.
Excellent. How do we get more information, though, Julie?
You can go to the Arboretum website at arb.umn.edu and then go to classes or learn. Go to the Learn tab and under classes, go to adult classes. You can also just type in Grow, Harvest, Eat in the search box, and I'm sure you'll find it that way, too.
Great idea. All right. Let's get back to our Lawn and Garden show called Smart Garden with phone calls. First up, Maddie calling in from Coon Rapids this morning. Maddie, what is your question for Julie, please?
My first question is, I called in March or so, and you said I needed a special spray for white flies, insecticidal spray. The stores didn't have them, so I made a recipe that I found, 1 gallon of water, 2 teaspoons of baking soda, 2 teaspoons of dish detergent, and 2 teaspoons of white vinegar. I mixed that together, and it worked. It saved most of my plants. But now this plant, I had this mixture mixed up, and I accidentally put fertilizer in with the mixture. Is that going to be safe to water the plants with this mixture in it, or should I dump it out and start over?
I would recommend dumping it out and starting over. Home remedies can be a little bit tricky, and I don't know how they would react with your fertilizer, so it's best to use them separately. I still am an advocate for purchasing a product like an insecticidal soap or a horticultural oil. They come pre-mixed in a spray bottle, and you can use them. You can read on the label, and it will say white flies or aphids or whatever pests it will treat. I'm glad you had good luck with your recipe. Sometimes those recipes, people don't follow all the correct instructions. You apparently did. You took care of your insects. But you want to start with, you want to separate your fertilizer from that.
Okay. Before we get back to Before we get back to the phones, Julie, I want to grab a couple of texters who've been waiting a while, too. Everything is blooming early this year, texter says. How can we keep the plant healthy so they can continue to grow? When do we, quote, stop fertilizing perennials and shrubs?
We usually stop fertilizing perennials and shrubs around August because we want those plants to slowly go into dormancy. And if we keep plugging them with a lot of fertilizer, they're going to keep growing new growth. And that new growth is not going to harden off before it gets cold around here. So stop fertilizing around August. But one thing you can do to keep your plants and maybe even encourage a second flush of flowers is to deadhead your plants. So I just did this up at the Foodscape, and I did it with our Monarda. So we had Bradbury's Monarda. It bloomed beautifully, great plant, and I went around and deadheaded it. So that's my recommendation for keeping those plants bloomy and maybe get a second bloom. It's basically you're taking out the need to produce seed, and that's a lot of stress on a plant. But promoting a second flush of flowers is always great. So deadheading would be a good way to do it.
Very good. Back to the phones we go. Jack calling in this morning from Jenkins. Jack, what is your question for Julie?
Well, Julie, I have a couple of beautiful mandeville plants that have become a little waterlogged. So I drilled some holes in the bottom of these planters. The water completely drained out, I believe. Should it be something I should take out and put new potting soil in or let them just dry out on their own? Thank you.
Great question. Thank you for drilling the holes. That was a perfect thing to do. I think I would leave them for now. It depends how old the plants are. If you've had them for several years, if you've been able to keep them through winter, it may be time to repot them anyway. But definitely before you do anything, let them dry out. And then you can decide, maybe looking at the plant, I need to put this in a larger pot, and it would be good to transplant them. Sometimes it's good to do that just to check the roots to see if there's any rot, and you want to just prune that off if you see it.
Okay. Listener Julie wants to know, can I remove any dead branches from my ash tree, or do I need to wait until winter?
Well, I'm a fan of waiting till winter because you can actually see the plant, see the dead branches. But I would check on our Trees and Shrubs webpage on that. If they are completely dead branches, yes, you can probably prune those off now. I'm trying to think of the life cycle of the emerald ash borer. If there's anybody who's a tree care advisor or an arborist out there, if you're going to text in, that'd be great. I'm not sure of the pruning time. I think in the spring we want to stay away from pruning ash and just wait. So it's always the safest bet's always winter to do that.
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Texter says, so many gardener friends and myself have this problem. Are peonies with few or no buds in bloom? What is going on?
Well, that I'm not sure. It could be just the weather that we've been having. We've had a lot of cold or cool weather. It's been very wet. It's been very windy. It could be also that your peonies have become shaded by larger plants around them, just by, you know, the plants growing. So I would take a look at the conditions that your plants are in. August is a good time to start transplanting peonies, so you may think about doing that. You may want to divide them, too. If they're really old plants, they could become quite crowded. And that, so August would be a good time to do that.
Let's grab another text before we take a quick break. This listener says, Sansevieria house plant, about 15 inches tall, has a small mushroom or toadstool at the base of the plant. What's going on?
Oh, it's just some fungal spores that are in that soil, whatever soil it, you might have potted it up with or it came with. It's probably too wet also. That's an indicator that the soil is too wet. Sansevieria are notorious for being hands-off kind of plants. They're great first plants for people. They tolerate and do well in low light, and they also really want to be neglected. So not a lot of fertilizer. In fact, I've heard people, they tolerate and do well in low light, and they also really want to be neglected. So not a lot of fertilizer. In fact, I've killed a Sansevieria by over-fertilizing it before, and they don't really want to be repotted very much. So I would back off on any watering. Make sure your pot that it's in is draining well. Sometimes they come in decorative pots and you've got a double pot situation. Make sure you're taking it out and there's no water sitting in the base of that decorative pot. So, yeah, just that's a very hands-off plant.
Oh, that's great.
And you can pull that mushroom out.
Say, I want to ask you quickly before we take this quick break, what's happening with the Abiders and when are you guys performing?
Hey, we are going to be at Minnetonka Orchards out in Minnetrista tomorrow afternoon or evening, 5 to 8. We'll be, and it looks like it's going to be really nice weather because we're outside.
Yes.
We'll be down by the pizza oven, and which is fantastic, by the way. They have also refreshments there too, both alcoholic and non-alcoholic. It's a great venue. We're really excited. We have a number of sessions with them this year over the next few months. And then we will be at Buckhorn Days in Long Lake on July 13th, and we'll be at the Arboretum on the 14th. So we have quite a few gigs coming up. Hope to see some of our listeners there. It's always really fun to meet you in person.
Oh, yeah. And you, I know we joke about it, but you have answered gardening questions in between sets.
Yes, I have.
Yeah. It sounds like fun. It is fun.
Yeah.
I've been there, too.
It'll
All right, Julie, hang on. We're going to take a quick break. You'll be right back with more Smart Garden on News Talk 830 WCCO. And good morning. Welcome back to the remaining minutes of our Smart Garden Show here on CCO every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M has been answering all of those lawn and garden questions, and we still have a bunch. See, Julie, how many we can field here before you leave.
That sounds good.
A Royal Frost birch that we planted, Texter says, 10 years ago. It thrived until last year when one of the tree trunks died. This year, another trunk died, and the last trunk only leafed out in the bottom 3 feet of branches. Is there any hope for that last remaining trunk, or are we best to remove the entire tree?
Yeah, this is a clump form, which are gorgeous. I'd be considering removing it at this point, because usually when you start to lose the individual branches or stems within a clump, the tree kind of looks lousy. You know, the other one is, it might be leaning one direction or so. It just looks odd. You've got these other two stumps that are around it. So I'd start looking for a new tree, especially because the third stem has not leafed out very well. Birches are fairly short-lived plants, you know, maybe 20 years. And oftentimes we put them into an urban sites where they really struggle. They like cool, acidic, highly organic, protected soils. Think of the North Shore, where they are covered with low-growing plants underneath, and nobody's mowing them, mowing on their roots or walking on them. The roots are very, very shallow. And so I would start thinking about another plant in this case.
Okay. Listener wants to know, can I prune back my burning bush now?
Yeah, you can probably prune some of that back. I do a little bit of selective pruning on a plant that I have, and it's just fine. So, yes, you can do some pruning.
This is an interesting lawn question. I can kind of relate to some of this. Love the show, thank you. With all this rain, you would think my grass would be luscious, but even though I mow when I can, it appears to be yellow underneath and shows most after mowing. I mow between 3 1/4, 3 1/2 inches. I've seen some of that, too, and I'm not sure why. I would think it would be a deep green.
Oh, I wish John was on for this one.
Yeah.
I'm going to hazard a guess that this is probably due to the really wet conditions that we've had.
Yeah.
And it could also be that there is some kind of fungal or bacterial issue going on in these, particularly if it's in spots. You can take a picture of it, of what you're seeing after mowing, and you can send that in to ask a master gardener. We do have master gardeners who have trained under John for turf experience, and they may be able to isolate and determine the problem. I'm thinking it's abiotic, meaning it's conditions and not necessarily a biotic issue like an insect or a disease, but I think it's just been amazingly wet, and maybe it will grow out of it as things dry out.
Julie, another listener wants to know, should we be treating for slugs now? They haven't seen any yet, but expect they'll be showing up with all the moisture.
Yeah, I would start protecting plants from slugs if you have a history of that. Just a tip for hostas. One of the things that I do with my hostas, and I have hostas of all sizes, if the leaves are lying on the ground, you're creating like a perfect haven for slugs. And so just removing some of those lower leaves to increase the light to reach the base of the plant, you kind of get more of a little bit vase-shaped plant. But just removing some of those lower leaves will help to get that plant up off the ground and less likely to be infested by slugs. But there are also products, if you don't want to do that, that you can put out. Sometimes it's as simple as putting a board or something flat, like in a walkway area, and the slugs will be attracted to that. And you can pick up that board, flip it over in the morning, scrape those slugs right off, and dispose of them.
Preferably after breakfast.
Or go fishing with them.
Okay, yes.
Feed them to your
snakes. My gardener, Texas says, has heavy soil. Well, now it's getting moss all over. What do I do?
Oh, well, moss is oftentimes due to, of course, moisture, also compaction of soil. And so you may want to scrape off that moss and then maybe loosen up that soil, and then either, if you're going to plant, you know, herbaceous plants like perennials or annuals or something, or if you want to go ahead and seed that area. You could also mulch it. It might be an area that, you know, it's just a wet space. You put some mulch down on it and make it more of a walking access area.
Okay. 2 minutes to go on the show, Julie. Here's another one. I have a potted tropical hibiscus that I winter inside, put outside in the summer. It is overgrown and needs pruning. Can I do that now before setting it outside?
Yeah, totally. You can do that. And you can also do it again when you bring it inside. You can cut it back. Unfortunately, it's usually ready to bloom when we bring it in. But sometimes selective pruning will enhance the look of it and also help with the size management indoors. So, yeah, go ahead and prune.
Okay. This listener, Julie, says, how can I keep my daylilies blooming?
Well, daylilies are called daylilies because they only bloom one for a day, the flowers. So it depends on the type you have. Some are repeated bloomers like the common Stella de Oros, but some of the more, the larger daylilies, they will bloom profusely at first, and then they start to bloom less and less as the season goes on. So deadheading them is always a great idea because those stems look kind of lousy. And they also start to produce seed pods. So you can trim those off, and then that will put the energy of the plant into reblooming and also keeping the root development really strong. But if there's seed pods on it, that plant is going to put energy into producing those seed pods. So deadheading is what I recommend.
30 seconds to go, Julie. Let's remind the listeners to find a couple of things. Get to the Arboretum, and what is that university website?
extension.umn.edu. And if you did not get your question answered, or you find you have one during the week, go to Ask a Master Gardener. You can send in photos, and we have many Master Gardeners waiting to help you.
And as far as the Arboretum goes, how do you find out more information? Get online.
Get online, arb.umn.edu, and check to see if you need tickets. Members do not need tickets on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays, but you just double check that before you come all the way out here.
Sounds good. Have a good time tomorrow, Julie, you and the
Thanks.
Abiders. And let's talk soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Denny.
Julie Weisenhorn from the University of Minnesota. Stay tuned next for our home improvement show. A brand new grandpa, Andy Lindis, will be answering all of your home improvement questions next hour. Stay with us. News Talk 830. This is WCCO.